How are you?
She's a good lady. When she says otogorera shai, she says she's happy to see you at Dandora Downside.
Thank you. What's happening here?
Like, you see the truck there?
Yeah.
It's coming to dump here at Dandora Downside. It has already, like, collected all the garbage from the areas they have come from. And this garbage is coming. When they come with their trash, they come here. Way at the here the way bridge, and then this is the city council office. If they are contracted by the city county pays the contractors.
Yeah.
But if it's a private firm, like
yeah.
if Cricket or Patrick owns a garbage collection yeah. company, they'll go collect that waste, and then when they come here at Dandora Damsite, they will way here at the way bridge, and then they will pay to the city county.
Okay.
Yeah.
And today is Saturday, so therefore it's closed.
Yeah, today is Saturday. It's not closed. It's only that the business, like how people work in the public spaces, it's not yet time for them to start.
So they
the
still
work.
Have their morning coffee.
Yeah, they're still having their morning coffee.
You're hearing Cricket, artist, servant leader, and my guide for the day. On a Saturday morning in August 2025, I met him opposite Dandora Police Station. Cricket and his comrades took me on a tour through Kenya's largest dump site.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Dumping waste is a legal practice in Kenya, as in many other countries around the world. Dandora Dumpsite has a size of approximately 40 hectares, or 55 soccer pitches. There are several gates to the dumpsite. Trucks that pass the gate need to pay a fee based on the weight of the waste they dump here.
Now, this is a newly constructed weighbridge. They are saying it's more modern than the other. That's when it's they are calling it an old school weighbridge.
Yeah.
Like this, when you weigh there, you have to weigh like two times in the older weighbridge, like enter and exit, like for the loaded and the offloaded truck. But this, they are saying when you come, you'll only have to like weigh once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it has like, it will weigh the truck when it's empty and when it's loaded.
Yeah.
Yeah, it will be keeping those records.
Yeah.
So it's computerized maybe.
Okay.
To keep the records for all the trucks dumping here.
Even before sorting starts, the ground crew keeps the flow moving, leveling, unsticking, clearing the way for the next dump.
Here they are parking.
Yeah.
Over generally what the tractors do here, they level the ground when trash is dumped. Like they level the grounds for other garbage trucks to come and dump. When the vehicles come to dump here, because of the mud and all stuff, the bad roads, sometimes they are trapped in the mud. And then the trucks help them, like they pull them from the mud.
We are still close to one of the main gates. We see trucks passing by. I see about 80 to 100 people at different locations, most of them in groups. As the trucks offload the waste, the people start to sort it and aggregate the different fractions in big bags and various piles.
Yeah. Now what happens here? These are some valuables that came with a truck, maybe from Cricket's company that collected maybe in an estate in Nairobi. It came with the waste and plus this. When it comes to dump at the landfill, there are women, there are men, there are boys who do the sorting. They'll separate the waste from these valuables. And then these valuables will come with them in kind of bigger sacks. And when you put them here, we'll come like pour them in a space like this, in a kalan like this. When we pour them here, we'll do some sortings later. Like we'll separate the PET, the carton, the glass bottles, the tins, the nini. The what do we call them? The plastics, the papers. You see, like these papers that they are put in the waste. They are also of value.
Yeah.
Like these are sorted like papers. They'll be taken back to the companies.
Every now and then, when enough material is aggregated, other trucks come and pick up the sorted fractions. as we saw here with textiles made out of cotton.
That's a vehicle being loaded cotton.
Uh-huh.
The vehicle is from...
It's picking up the cotton. Yeah.
It's from a company. So the people collected the cotton. After they collected the cotton, they brought them here.
Yeah.
And then they called the company to come buy the... The cotton. That's what we do with the quinchas, with the tins, with everything here.
We continue walking and I see 10 or 12 women sitting on the ground. There is no rubbish under their feet, only sand or dug up earth. In some places, the women have dug deep holes with their bare hands. They sift through the earth and look closely at what they find.
They are women. So this is like sand that has come with some small metals. They are trying to extract from the soil.
They're using a magnet. They're using a magnet. So when the magnet gets into the soil, it will attract some metals.
Yeah.
And then he'll put the flour.
With a simple magnet, they separate the metals from other materials. Like everywhere in the world, people pay a higher price for metals.
Now, Patrick, sometimes you ask what maybe of value maybe. See this?
Yeah.
Like if you were to sell this for a kg, they buy at 120 shillings. That approximately maybe $1.
Yeah. For 1 kilogram
of... For 1 kilogram of this.
Yeah.
And for this, they go like for 32 shillings now for a kg of this pet. And then maybe these are of less value.
Yeah.
They take this at 5 shillings mostly for a kilogram.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how often do the prices change?
How often? I think their prices are affected by whatever the companies out there are doing.
Yeah.
Like think of if we are going to the holidays, like think of the Decembers and all the owners of these corporations are going back to their maybe, sorry to say, their countries for maybe to be with their families. And then the prices will go so down that someone with like this stock will prefer not to sell and wait for the corporations to reopen and do the sellings.
Okay. Ultimately, people here follow the rules of the market. If there are buyers willing to pay a price for a material, it is sorted out. If there are no such buyers, the material remains where it is and the landfill grows. From an economic perspective, Dandora Dumpsite is therefore nothing more than a large sorting facility. Materials with reuse and recycling potential are sorted out and transported away. The rest remains here. But who are the people behind this sorting facility?
To think of it, the many people you are seeing here, if they are in this work and working, the much maybe a lady can earn from here is less than $2.
$2
per day.
Per day.
If you are employed, you are lucky and get someone to employ you here in the dump site, then you'll get even up to $3 maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there is a bigger gap in the classes of people here in the dump site.
Okay.
Like, they are the people, sorry to say so, they are the people who are like the big fishes in this site. Like, they'll have the good stock. So, when I was talking of classes, I thought of like, there are women here, are kids here, kids who maybe at some point, like, raising school fees for them was so hard.
In Kenya, there is an obligation to send your kids to school. However, public schools are not for free. You have to pay tuition fees. This puts high financial pressure on families and the kids.
And they had like to find a place to get an honest living for themselves. Mm-hmm. Those are the kids. They'll come here to the dump site and try to pick what they can pick. Mm-hmm. And then they'd sell. Mm-hmm. There is a class of maybe the women now who are the mothers to these kids, who come and do the separation work, like for a kind of stock.
Yeah.
They will go to the fields, and when the vehicles are dumping, they will separate what's the big fish's material and still take the small for themselves.
Okay.
Okay? When they get the small for themselves, of course, they'll do the rest and the selling and everything.
To put it neutrally, the work here is organized. To put it in terms of how it feels to the people involved, there is oppression. No one can simply walk onto the dump site and take the valuable materials. Everything follows invisible rules, which Cricket and his comrades make visible to me. There are the big fish who claim the valuable materials. They hire people to do the sorting. These people are supervised by a guard so that all the valuable materials end up in the big fish's bags and not in the pockets of the women and children. The bags are then sold to recyclers who pay the big fish for them. Each group has its own storage areas.
Now we can separate the classes now. I just want you to observe what is happening. There is like this guy, he's standing like behind the others. Mm-hmm. So the others are like walking and he's standing behind, like he's controlling, saying, pick that, he's like a supervisor in a company. And then he's working for another guy now.
Ah, okay.
Now the overall, not even the
biggest
manager,
piece. The
owner of whatever is being collected.
Now, this is the same things that we are talking about there from the stocks. These are the valuables, the plastics, the cans, the pets, the quenchers. And then you see here, there's a huge difference now.
This is what like
the women are putting aside. But again, this doesn't belong to the lady. Now this belongs to the supervisor. Yeah. And then now this belongs to the big fish. Like this is what is left for the whole population
to live.
Like the other speakers to think. If you think of this and this, if you go to like weigh that in a kilogram, maybe he'll get some $2 from collecting from this, maybe a heap from a big truck, maybe. This is what he will take and maybe he'll get some like $2. You see now this, if you get something like, you get a stock like this in the dump site, it doesn't belong to just anyone.
Uh-huh.
There is a class of the big fishes that will have this. And then you'll have the, like, our women. They see that these are all bases of the women.
Yeah.
Like, these are all their stocks.
Yeah.
Like, the small, can see even the Kaland portion they're having. Like, a small portion for a lady. Like, all these are women in one space. But this, you'll get all this. It's a space for one guy.
Okay.
Yeah. So, the women, I think this is a clear example. Now, this. Like, this is a small base where the women are putting their things. You can see there are no, like, these valuable things. There are other things like sacks, like torn bags. I think Joseph can try and open and see what the women pick when they...
This is what they pick at when the vehicles are uploading the trash. So there are some things that she cannot fit, like the bottle, the water bottles, the liquor bottle.
Yeah. So it's kind of already clear who gets what kind of waste, so to say.
You see all these kids?
Yeah.
Some have been in school. Now their schools are closed. And maybe they have come here to try and find something to get because from home, the realities, to be honest, are not that that someone can provide for. So they have like to come here and try scavenge and get maybe something to eat, maybe also get something to take to their families.
Yeah, and I mean, part of the truth is that you have to pay school fees, right?
Yeah.
Part of it is to pay maybe their twin fees for their younger sibling.
It's an all split, like struggle. If I get like $2, I know that $1 is used maybe for my food.
Yeah.
And for some one-twos. And then the rest I'll use maybe to cater for some other bills and help their mothers maybe.
Yeah.
Sadly, there are even people here living with disability coming to work here. Yeah. I don't know if we haven't seen any of them to have like 3 women who are living on scratches, but they'll have to come here and scavenge at the dump site. Sadly, no one like gives them like the treatment of like,
need, yeah.
Okay, these are people, they are living with this and this, and they have like to be treated in a certain way.
Yeah.
Like, we are all like treated equally, depending on not maybe conforming to any of your conditions.
Working at the Dandora dump site is also dangerous. Most people sort the waste with their bare hands. Only a few wear personal protection equipment like gumboots. I see many people in flip-flops while heavy vehicles are operating.
People also get injured by the trucks and then no one compensates them because they say,
why are you working here at the dump?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they are not supposed to be waste pickers here.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
are only supposed to be operators, tractors, and someone controlling the trucks to dump. Why are you here? Come and see what's burning here. This is a car tire.
This was a car tire.
It was dumped here in Andorra. And when it was dumped, there's someone who picked the tire and felt like he could get some good metal from it.
Yeah.
And came, burnt it around here.
Okay.
And when he burnt it around here, he picked what he thought is metal.
Yeah.
And all the other was left here.
Right.
When the waste pickers are picking there, like their glasses.
Yeah.
They are using their hands.
Yeah.
Like to collect.
Cut. This is the cut I got in the morning while I was working.
Yeah.
I have another one here.
Yeah. Think of the cuts. Actually, these are the smallest of cuts maybe someone can get.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dumps. But that was not what I was talking about. Think of this like this, after it's burning, the smoke, and the people are living here. Mm-hmm. These are houses like where I've shown you. There are people living around here. And when you are doing a report 2 years ago, it was saying like 70% in our Kenya National Hospital, that is Kenyatta, it has a whole ward full of people who are suffering from respiratory diseases. Talk of them. They have gotten, like, the smoke has been so much around these places. And they were saying, like, for a person to be born here and grow up to 70 years, it's a struggle. It's a struggle. Yeah. So the people here get cut. The people here inhale all this. Because this is waste, and some companies don't even mind. They'll dump even the toxins of waste here. And when they dump it here, like, we will be all, like, collecting. Maybe someone will get a cut, like what Joseph was showing. Yeah. But others will get even deeper cuts. And when they get the deeper cuts, there are no, like, medics here to do you first aid. No free medical camps here. Like, even talk of our hospitals there. If you don't have some, like, something cash to go to the hospital, you'll not be attended.
Yeah.
If you are not subscribed to the authority, they are calling the social health authority. If you are not subscribed, then you'll not get treatment. So most of the waste pickers here, if we get cut, we'll just use, like, the leftovers from the alcohol, toss there that spirit, and we'll pour to disinfect it.
And you say all is well, and then you continue.
And the burning is mostly happening because people think, if I burn it, I'll get access to some more valuable materials.
The burning is due to the heat. When it heats, it started burning small, and later it becomes a big fire.
When you're outside, like at night, the whole place will be like cloudy. Like, it will look like it's some clouds that are formed from the farthest ends. You see all, like, it's all dark, smoke everywhere. Now, what's making that burn? I think there are, like, you see, there are these papers and there is everything. And also there is so much toxic waste that is being brought here. Chemicals.
Yeah.
And when they kind of, like, they are this, I don't know what they call them, but there are some chemical reactions happening. And then they explode.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, sometimes there are fires, even not the smoke. You'll see, like, fire burning. Yeah. Now, this is a public school. Facilitated maybe by the taxpayers' money and built by the government. But you can think of the kids learning here and all this, like, smoke from the dump site. That's why I was talking about the health conditions of the people maybe living around the dump site, and maybe even the kids who are learning here.
Like, you can see the smoke over the father told me.
It's all smoky.
Do the firefighters get here?
Firefight? No, to extinguish the fire. Actually, what happens when they are like, there is fire, like, in this place, if here there was fire here, no one would be concerned about what's happening.
Okay.
Here. Unless it's happening maybe
closer
to a big fish's stock or something. Yeah.
Talking about fish, humans are not the only ones living here. Oh, even goats.
Yeah. These are for the people, like, who are living here at the site. They'll leave their goats to come graze.
And the birds are just trying to eat
what
they think is eatable.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know if it's the other farther sense where the vehicles are dumping. There are a lot of birds. There are a lot of birds. But do you know a funny thing about these birds? No one has ever seen them like mating. We have never seen like small birds. We don't know how. We only see them.
The big ones, right?
A lot of rubbish leaves the landfill via recyclers. Some of it is eaten by animals. But rubbish is also a raw material for new products, ideas, and joint projects. Glass is one such raw material that leaves the dump site in various ways.
These are the glasses now, Patrick. I'll pour them at different sites, and then a guy will come sort what he thinks he can use and cut to make a good glass, and then the rest will be broken.
Yeah.
But also, some companies that do, they come and pick the bottles they feel they can take back to the companies that they refill the alcohol content and then they resell it.
Here the Heineken one, don't you get like a deposit?
No. So what I think, it's kind of same, only that now here, the business, maybe it's some people who are in the business.
Yeah.
Like I, maybe Joseph, we'll have some cash and we'll come buy like the Heineken bottle and we'll take it to that company.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like kind of same.
But not every bottle would be reused or recycled. Some bottles will turn into a different product.
You see, like the other guy you're going to visit on the far end of the dump site, when we collect like these glasses, like he'll take the glasses that can make good glasses, and they'll do like for decorations, put flowers for office tables.
After seeing how the bottles were sorted, we visit a friend who runs a small workshop on the edge of the dump site. We jump over a small stream, take a few steps to the right, left, left, and find ourselves in a room measuring approximately 2 by 2 meters. The walls and roof are made of sheet metal, and there is a small open space of the same size adjoining it. There are bottles and jars everywhere. In the corner is a small table with a contraption in which a sharp piece of metal is mounted.
You see, all this glass came from the materials that you are talking about in the stocks. And then, like, he had to sort what he feels is good for maybe making a glass or any decoration.
When did you start doing that? Like a year ago.
A year ago. The entrepreneurial spirit is evident. People are seeking ways to make the most out of waste. In doing so, they recognize the potential that lies within their abilities. So
where do you sell it,
then? I think it's not that bigger market.
Yeah.
But when maybe you have like some 2-3 comrades who need like some glass flap or decoration, you'll just like call him and he'll deliver. But the plan is what if he had maybe like not all this manual to do some small scale, but if he was to like have some good equipments to do all this, like some good equipments to do all this, make more glasses, and even then, you know, like try think of it, if he had like a large market now for this, who need like glasses for decoration, the plus, and then you're cutting them manually, then it means like their business, it will be stagnant. But if he had like some materials to cut the glasses faster, maybe he trains some other youth, maybe it can be an all adventure. On all business, and like employing like some people from the site to here, some women maybe from the site instead of going. Think of the people you're talking with who could maybe like barely walk or they are using crutches. Instead of going like picking, scourging from the trucks, they can come here like and sit and cut their glasses and then find market for their hotel, whatever they have.
I think it's
creatively like and collectively engaging. If he knows how to cut the grass, there is someone who knows how to do the decos.
Yeah, yeah.
There is another guy. Yeah. If like I can do the voiceovers for selling these products. Yeah. There is another guy who can see this and use them in their poems. There is a photographer, maybe a filmmaker, who when doing their films, instead of using these brands, they can use like these grasses for whatever we are doing. You know, art exhibitions will be featuring him also in the space so that he can come showcase what he's doing. Maybe if in the future I get some resources, we can all come together and creatively develop this, not to be not a one-person guy, but an employment for the people. Yeah. I'm thinking, Patrick, like, think of our, like, the Takataka solution they are doing. They are sorting all the valuables and they are bringing waste here. Most of the people here in the dam site, the kids who are coming now, where will they go if, like, all the valuable is taken away? Like, we need to have, like, other skills.
Yeah.
You see? Like, other skills. I can't go collect because there is no valuable in the waste, but I can go with an idea to creatively engage Takataka solution. You see what comrades, these bottles, instead of breaking them and selling, we can do some glasses, bottles, nice decors, and you sell them for a good price. I think it's how creatively and collectively we are engaging each other.
We leave the small workshop, jump over the gutter, and are back on the road. We want to get back to the other end of the dump site. A truck driver friend comes by. I am placed in the front, and the boys jump onto the loading ramp at the back. We drive once around the outside of the landfill, back to the entrance where we met. And now, the second part of the tour begins. How do the people who work here actually live?
And most of the waste pickers, Patrick, now live here. From this end to the last end, that's now Korogosho. We call it Korogosho. The whole of Korogosho was like all a forest.
Wow.
And then the people were evicted from the farthest ends of the estate, from talk of Karen, Highridge, the Kiambu, good places. And they were taken to here. They are resettled here at Korogosho. And then they are told by the government, you will do your houses. Of course, there was a progressive constitution then.
Yeah.
And then Article 43 was telling them that they will give them good houses. They'll give them food. They'll give them free education. But never happened. So whatever you're seeing, these are some bases of the people in the dam site. But there's like this constructed house, you'll find that the people, the waste pickers here, can't be able to afford like good houses. Mm-hmm. So we'll have like to rent some houses to stay here.
We walk down the Nairobi River. Women wash plastic bags in the already dirty river. They get a higher price per kilo for clean bags. A small bridge takes us to the other side where Korogosho begins. We get on two motorbikes and the drivers take us to the streets where Cricket and his friends live. We get off, lots of people greet us, children join us with interest. Cricket leads me over to a hut. A narrow path leads to the back, and after two turns, we are standing in a small, stony, dark room, maybe 3 by 2 meters. It looks uninhabited.
Like, for the longest time, this has been my mom's house. This is where she had rented. I used to sleep here with my brother, my sister, and my mom there. But after, like, we stayed there for like 6 to 7 years. But after last year, as I told you when I did the poem, I'd like to get another place for them to move from this place because there are those like risks like we wouldn't want to take.
Risks they would not want to take. Some things are very specific, others remain vague. Either way, life is anything but easy at and around Dandora Dumpsite.
When did you come here?
Huh?
When did you come to Dandora?
To Dandora dam site?
Yeah.
I've been here for the past 6 years. Now what happened? I was born, raised in Murang'a until I was 10. But there are some like family wrangles and my mom had to flee away from Murang'a. And she came to Nairobi. Mm-hmm. When she came to Nairobi, we were being hosted by a granny at Korogosho. Mm-hmm. Where we will go maybe take some looks and see the arts you're doing there. Where I was being hosted, like with my mom, Nini, and I schooled at Korogosho, still the same area, but it was an all-sack school. I did my secondary education and then went to college, and then there was no like job for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like after college, I decided to pursue art because growing in Korogosho, like seeing, witnessing all the injustices, seeing people like girls being raped, seeing like people in crime scene,
seen like boys being shot anyhowly. Like I think it was it's an all systemic like systemic challenge from maybe a mother today being evicted, tomorrow her kids are not going to school. There is all like the mental, you are not stable mentally. Some are using even the antidepressants and maybe some other drugs just for stability.
Yeah.
You don't have the money to buy the drugs. You see the people, yeah, they will go enter into yeah, crime. And then after crime, you'll see the police now will be hunting. They won't follow any like any rights to live. They won't take that. They'll shoot to kill. And then it's another case of an extrajudicial. And then there will be the civil society now chanting like, hey, justice for someone. Like, it was an all traumatic condition to live in Korogosho for I. So I was writing like some small bits, papers, putting them in pockets, hiding them, like giving my mom to hide for me, like my papers. Because like people feel if you speak against something in the slums,
yeah,
then you'll be another statistic, maybe of an extrajudicial killing or whatever. You see now, like, after writing all those pieces, like, there is no work, there is nothing. So I had to come here to dump site and try and earn something for myself. Mm-hmm. And then after coming to the dump site, we started doing things more than we're speaking. We started doing, like, some arts to give us something out of the dump site, maybe. And maybe talking also, organizing with other, like, comrades. There are people who felt like, okay, we can't take enough of this. We won't go to the streets to steal,
yeah,
but you can go to the streets and do some theater.
Yeah.
We can go to the streets and people will listen to our art,
yeah,
and then we'll get some, honestly. But then it wasn't an all cricket artistic junction dream.
Yeah.
Like you could feel all the youths all interested to join us, like do the arts, some with passion to perform, some
yeah,
ready maybe out of the struggle of not being employed, like they just want something in their pockets. And then when they come to the space, they realize now it's not even all about the small monies that
yeah,
you are getting. It's a bigger struggle. It's more of us maybe organizing. It's more of us being in a collective. It's more of us agitating
yeah,
for what we believe like in. It's more of us like creating awareness for these changes. Trust me, Patrick, in Dandora dam site, baby, before we were here, like women used to be raped like every day. So much cases. Like you could wake up and find a lady has been stabbed and she was raped. And it was all like, it was like a norm here. But after the awareness, like telling people, you know what, we need to change on this. You know what, we need to be more aggressive for change in this site. You know what, people, we can't be living in a gender-based violence dump site. Mm-hmm. And then he did some film. It's called Kenda, but it was an all partnership with other comrades. And then to spoke to people about the effects of gender-based violence. Actually, we are planning to stream it here in Dandora's dam site and also in our space so that the people can see whatever we are talking is happening in Korogosho and in mm-hmm, other spaces. It's happening here in Dandora dam site and the women maybe haven't had maybe a chance to speak for themselves. But again, it's not us being the voices of the women. It's not us being the voices of the voiceless. It's us, Patrick, talking about the issues and giving the people the mic to talk, to speak.
Sorry.
If there's one thing that strikes me time and time again in Kenya, it is the sense of community. Kenya has 42 registered indigenous tribes. Family, neighborhood, camaraderie, and society are central cornerstones in the lives of many Kenyans I have met. They don't just do things for themselves. They contribute to the community.
These are gang. Not the gang.
It looks like a bus stop on a little street where there are definitely no buses. Five or six men are sitting there watching the action with curiosity.
These people are resettled from Grogan, the estate, and they are brought here.
Okay.
And Grogan, the reformers, means that there are many young men who have been brought up in Korogosho.
Yeah.
And they are involved in crime activities and all that. And then they decided
to just reform and do something progressive with their lives. And then they have like a car wash here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's like their resilience. Like the spaces I was talking to you about, they'll come and settle here. Actually, the good thing now is that they are registered. If it was in the previous past, you could find like when the police are just returning, doing their patrols, the men would not just sit in the slum and just sit down because it would be a curtain marshals like Iran. But again, it's a good space. Was it? He's a great actor. He has been in the theater not for 1-2 years.
Oh, wow.
He moved from the acting scene and went to other sectors, but he's still an artist and he's organizing it the most. Yeah.
What are you playing?
State script. I was also doing movies here and there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like right now we're working with some of my guys here. We're doing a movie about our society. That's how we transformed our life. The criminal to becoming good guy.
So we're trying to put that in a movie so that people understand where you come from, what you have done to the community. They can see they can see through theater and through movies. So that's what you're lucky, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, not being the actual theater,
but
here in the street, working together with this great guy here.
I think we have done like almost 6 to 7 local short films, and we stream them here, like in the ghettos. Like this is our all. First of all, we'll have like a white sheet and attach it to all, and we'll project.
What always emerges is the perspective of the children. When life is hard and there's no perspective, people still come together to give children the best possible environment.
We do events, not regularly, but
from time to time.
Sometimes when we have the resources, but most likely on December 25th when it's Christmas, most of us, like, we were used to being locked in our houses by our parents because, like, you don't have new clothes and you don't have pillow to eat. So they used to lock us in our houses to avoid the stigma of, like, you have no new clothes, you don't eat pillow in your house. So, like, they would lock us. But to just connect with the kids, we decided, like, to do, like, collect small what we have, like, small amount he has, the others, whatever I can contribute, and just do, like, a big party for us all.
Great.
We close the roads. We have bouncing consoles for the kids. We have good music, and they all enjoy life here.
Yeah. We walk a few more small streets, accompanied by children. We stop occasionally for a chat. Behind a wall, perhaps 2 meters high, we enter a kind of small garden, about 10 by 6 meters in size.
Yeah. So now, Patrick, this is a space that I got. You had some monies from a particular show, and I invested and bought this space.
How are you?
There's always life to mother. She'll always be complaining until they... So the idea, Patrick, is to transform this to an art center. Mm-hmm. All these kids, when they are here, if they need to study to get running materials, they'll have to pay to our libraries, maybe like 200 shillings per month. And you get with the harsh realities like of the low income, the people like in the downside from the waste pickers, the mothers, if you're telling them now to get another 200 shillings to pay for a library, then it becomes another struggle in an already existing struggle. Like in this area, if you can't have a land and use it without some monies. So you're thinking of if this would be an empowerment center, not for only for all these kids, but for the youth that you have found, like, doing their works. They need some space that will get resources. Like, if think of the artists, they need a good stage to do their arts. Think of the mothers doing beadwork. Like, she's doing it in her home. Think of if it was an all-grown space for the women, like, maybe even in the downside. As I was telling you, it's more of maybe them getting newer skills this was an all good empowerment center for them.
Yeah.
That means that the women will have a space they can come, find, fix the bits and do their beadwork.
Yeah.
They come and then maybe meet other women.
There's cooperation everywhere. A group of three women joins us and tells us about their activities and plans.
Basically, when the women come together, there's a lot of things they discuss it. First of all, it's the issue of gender-based violence in our community. So if they take it as a therapy session for us to come together and handle those sessions.
Talk about it.
Talk about it. Vent out. And it's comfortable being here because of the chaotic environment. Yeah. So basically, we think it's fair enough if we can mobilize enough resources and build that art center for this between
So it's also been a good space for us for exposure for our kids to go see how a good theater looks like. Sadly, the theater, if you don't have resources, we can't be able to access the theater. All the spaces, like along the riverbanks, I've shown you, like how the houses were demolished. There were spaces. Youths had spaces there. Like the kids could go, not only play, but there are good places, equipped art centers. But they are all demolished. And then the remaining art centers, if you don't have good money, cricket can't do a recording. Yeah, they are so much commercialized that... You can't be able to access the spaces. Yeah. I'm thinking, what if this was just a space for everyone? Come do your art, go home, you leave the space clean, and if as you found it, then it's going to grow.
Community, cohesion, and support are what people here experience every day. What they need, what gives them the chance to live a slightly less strenuous life. What works on a small scale at the Dandora Dam site and in Korogosha, how can it be achieved on a larger scale? How can people show solidarity and take responsibility for their own actions across thousands of kilometers? Is it political development aid? Is it donations to local organizations?
But now, Patrick, I have a problem. My problem is the people who are always talking to us about climate action, how we need to deal with climate change. They are also the largest pollutants, and they are not taking responsibility for the waste, for whatever damage they have done to this planet. Only like imagine a person telling us like, now for a small group like us, like we'll do some funding to you and we'll try it, like plant some carbon, like talk of carbon trees.
Yep.
And then again, whatever they are giving in exchange, they are peanuts. Think of the Nairobi River that you have just seen. It's so dirty. Yep. Sadly, the people who have made the river to be like it is, they are the same people who are coming up with projects for us to clean the same river.
Yeah.
It's a sad state.
This was the second episode of our series about circular entrepreneurship in Kenya. Cricket and his comrades took me on a tour through Dandora Dam site and Korogosha. Check the show notes for the links where you can learn more about their work. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this episode, sign up to the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. In the next episode, we will talk to the managing director and owner of Takataka Solutions, Kenya's largest waste collector. Until then, let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.